whole family. I'm Father Mitch Pacwa, and I'm back in my home city of Chicago at Loyola University, where I used to teach. And we're in the domestic chapel, where I have the privilege this evening of presenting to you the Father General of the Society of Jesus. Good evening, Father General.
Good evening. This
is Father Peter Hans Kovenbach, Estes, the Reverend Father General of the Society of Jesus. And you're here from Rome to attend some meetings and take care of some contacts here in the United States at this time. Welcome to our country.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you very much for being with us here at EWTN. Most of the people who see our station have never met you or seen you. And I'd like to just introduce you a little bit to our audience. Where are you from originally?
Originally, I was born in the Kingdom of the Netherlands, mainly known as Holland. The family came from Germany, from a town in the Eifel called Kolvenbach, as it should be. And already more than two centuries ago, part of the family moved out to the United States in the Milwaukee area. The other part moved to the north of Europe, and I belong to that part.
And you entered the Society of Jesus when?
I entered in the Society in 48, and in the Netherlands itself. But I have to confess that the most part of my life was in the Middle East.
Where?
Because my desire was always to go to Russia, to Holy Russia.
Yeah.
But I think they considered this wish as romantic, so I never came there. But at one moment I was sent to the Middle East, and I still consider this as the most beautiful gift of the Lord in my life. Because it was really a privilege to live in the country where the Lord himself has lived.
Yes.
And where still so many things in daily life recall the presence of the Lord. Also, on the other side, there are the churches of the origins of the church, the Oriental churches, and then in daily contact with the Islam, with the Muslims. At the same time, it is a violent area. Everybody knows about it. You can read it in the newspapers. But at the same time, the people are really hospitable or good, and it is so difficult and so painful to know that in the land of our Lord, that all this violence is still going, and practically for the moment without solution.
Yeah, yeah. Where exactly did you live in the Middle East?
Now, I lived most of time in Lebanon, and especially in the city of Beirut, because I was professor at the university there. In linguistics, Oriental linguistics.
What was your specialty within linguistics?
Well, this I learned this in the Netherlands, in Germany, and in France.
I see.
Where I finished this kind of studies.
But one of the things that's not exactly common for the Dutch to learn is Armenian. you became rather an expert in Armenian.
Yeah, because in general linguistics, we have to learn all the Indo-European languages, and Armenian is a questionable Indo-European language. And for that reason, we all learned it. Yes. It is a very interesting language, the classical language. So when I came to Beirut, I discovered a whole colony of Armenians. They were all refugees, and trying to build up a new life in that area.
And you became part of the Armenian Rite Catholics?
Yeah, this day I was sent to this church because I could celebrate the liturgy in that language. And it was for me a great joy to learn and to be brought up practically in the spirituality of the Armenian church, the oldest state church in the world.
Yeah, that a lot of people don't realize that the Armenia was the first country to become Christian officially.
And we celebrated that a few years ago.
Yes, exactly. And His Holiness was very much part of that. Now, how long did you stay in Beirut?
No, I came there in 58, and I left there in 81. So the whole time of the war, and the war lasted at least 12 years, so I lived with everybody in that situation. But at the same time, I came also to Syria, to Jordan, to the Holy Land, and to Egypt.
Uh-huh. So you got a good sense of the whole
Middle East. Because it was superior, provincial superior of the Jesuits in that whole Near East area. Till I was called to Rome to be rector of the Oriental Institute. That is an institution where people who like to serve the Oriental churches can get a master's degree or a PhD.
Uh-huh. And so you were a professor at the Oriental Institute in Rome.
Yeah, and rector.
And rector as well. And then you got called to be Jesuit, the superior.
Yeah, so at my surprise. But I was elected in 83.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so you've been serving as the Father General of the Society of Jesus since 1983.
I was quite surprised because I have to confess, the Middle East is a very difficult area, and we were so busy with survival questions. Yes. That to know about the church in the world, to know about the Jesuits worldwide, that was not at all in our way of life. Yes. So practically, I have to confess that I did not know well the Society of Jesus when I became a general.
And since becoming general, you've had more opportunity to see the society worldwide?
I was very well helped by the assistants, because the general has a certain amount of assistants, and they all are specialists in this or that geographical area of the society. And in this way, also by visiting the Jesuits, I became aware of what the society in the world is meaning and is doing.
Have you then been through all parts of the world where the society is?
No, we are practically everywhere. Yeah, yeah. So even if after 19 years, I have to confess that there are still parts of the world where I could not go. Yeah. Or I did not go.
Yeah. So. And what's been your reaction so far in doing this ministry?
No, I really believe it is in grace of the Lord. And I really wish with all my heart that all would have the opportunity to be general of the Society of Jesus and to know what is really going on in this group of men. They are now something like 21,000, all on mission, all trying to continue the mission of the Lord, especially there where Christ is not known or is badly known.
Yeah, and that's been always, in one sense for me too, not a sense of being the general, but a sense of the privilege of being in the society. It's just, to me, it's an awesome privilege just to be a member of the society, yet long to get to see it all. One of the things that you have written to us about in the past has been this new evangelization. Again, you mentioned how so many Jesuits are doing what's traditional to us, to be in places where Christ is not known or is known poorly and barely known. And we've always seen this as a mission for us. In the modern world, though, Pope John Paul and you have both been talking about a new evangelization. Do you want to expound a little bit what that means?
Now, the Holy Father himself has given already many years ago, let us say, something like the definition of the new evangelization. And for him, it means new zeal, new language, new approach. New zeal because we could be discouraged. And for example, I'd like to speak about India. Yeah. There, St. Francis Xavier, 4 centuries ago, did a tremendous work, and so many religious and priests and laity tried to evangelize India. After 4 centuries, less than 2% of India is Catholic. Yeah. What is the will of the Lord? So someone could be discouraged. Yeah. And say, let everybody just be saved in the condition, in the religious condition, in the social condition wherein he is living. And especially today with something like a society where so many cultures, so many religions were known, thanks to the mass media, the idea could come up, well, all these people, are they really so bad? Will they not be saved? In one way or another, the Lord will save them, and we have to respect their conscience.
Yeah. So that would be the one perspective in the face of not converting India in the last 400 years, would say, let them be as they are.
But now, then really we need, as the Holy Father said, new zeal. That means that we like to announce Christ and to give to the world the person of Christ, his values, his prayer, his life. And I really believe that this is the issue today. It is not at all a question of to conquer the world. That evangelization doesn't mean to force the people to the Lord. The Lord himself never did this. He spoke with them. He was something like a beggar to present his message, his good news. And then the people, he was always very grateful and joyful when they listened and when they accepted this. But he respected the liberty of everybody. Now, I think that this new zeal comes out of our personal experience of Christ. Just when we have met the Lord in a personal way, well, then also we like that others have this experience. And that should be, out of the commandment of love, the motivation of the new zeal to announce Christ to the world. We are convinced that the world needs Christ. If not, it will go to destruction. So many things today in the world are suicidal, and we know this. The Lord can bring us really to the true truth and to the happiness, and we like, out of love, to do this and to announce with a new zeal the gospel of the Lord.
And I think even in the Christian countries of the West, where it seems that the Christian faith seems to be receding, is precisely again where that new zeal is needed among Christians.
Of course, sometimes in East Europe, some are saying that in the time of communism it was more easy because there was a clear enemy, so you know to whom and against whom to speak.
Yes.
But now, with this indifference in the world, there is no more enemy. Because, well, you can say what you like, and it just passes as if nothing is said. And then it is much more difficult to announce the good news of the world.
Yeah. And so in the face of that indifference, the response that the Pope wants us to have, and you've been calling us Jesuits to, is not indifference. Not say, well, okay, if you don't want to believe in God, you do your thing, I'll believe in God, that's my thing. No, out of our love of Christ, we are called to the same zeal again.
And that is the reason that as Jesuits we feel that we should bring the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. They don't belong to the Jesuits. We don't have a copyright on the spiritual exercises. So many non-Jesuits are giving this to others freely and graciously. But the purpose of the spiritual exercises is, as Ignatius himself said, to help people to encounter personally Christ, who is at the beginning of every life and who will be at the end of every human life. To encounter him personally. And that is what today is the biggest need of the new evangelization. That means the personal encounter with the Lord.
And just to clarify two things. One is that the zeal will come not by some human program, but by our own contact with Christ. That has to be the source.
He is the motivation, and also he is the reason why we like to announce the good news.
And then secondly, so that some of our viewers don't know what the spiritual exercises are, briefly, what would the spiritual exercises of Ignatius mean, just to, for those who don't know anything about them, what would that be?
Now, it was the experience of Ignatius. Mm-hmm. He was sick, and because he had nothing to do, he he had this experience of the Lord, and he discovered the Lord in a personal way. Yeah. And what he just likes to bring to everybody is, this is my experience, yeah, this is the way, this is only one way, there can be many other ways, but if this helps you to encounter the Lord, go to him. So practically, what he is asking us is to recognize that we are responsible for so many bad things in the world. That is called by him the first week. To recognize that all what we don't like in the world today, that we have our responsibility in this. And then that he discovers how the Lord invites us to build up with him what the Holy Father calls the civilization of love, the communion with him, the new world that is really built on the gospel, on Christ himself. And so he leads us through the mysteries of the life of Christ, and then it ends with a declaration of love. Just, Lord, take and receive myself, so that I can continue for you and with you your mission among the men and women of our days.
Yeah. So that and the spiritual exercises is in its fullest a 4-week retreat.
Yeah, normally it are 30 days.
Yeah.
But it is not more necessary to go to a retreat house, because many will never be able to have 30 days off. So today, and Ignatius already did this, it is done in daily life.
Yeah.
So you can go on with your work, with your family, and still do really this discovery of the personal encounter with the Lord.
And still some of our retreat houses in this country offer the spiritual exercises on a weekend or a 5-day basis, so people can make a shorter version, but the purpose of it all is to have this encounter with Christ, and from that to also to receive that gift of zeal to go out and be missionaries, because again, St. Ignatius always wanted us to go back out to the world.
Then the second part of this new evangelization is a difficult one, the new language. How to touch really the heart of the people. This St. Paul had already the problem. If you speak but you don't touch the person, you will never announce the Lord. In former times, he believed that this problem called inculturation was just for an American missionary going to Japan. It was clear that he should learn not only the Japanese language, but that he should know the Japanese culture, the way of life, so that in that culture he could announce Christ. And so that the Japanese would receive the Lord in Japanese way, and not become foreigners in their own country when they are Christians. Now, today, that is not more only for an American who goes to Japan, but in America itself, to speak with, to announce the gospel to children, to students, to businessmen, to soldiers, every time you need a new language, just to announce the Lord in a way that their hearts are touched. And that is how to speak today to the people.
So that it's not a matter just of being able to use my words because I understand it.
No.
But the goal of this new language of that enculturation is to make sure the person hearing me understands it on their terms.
Yeah.
And that they don't have to change what's good in their culture, but it's rather to allow Christ to take what's good and elevate it, but I have to speak their language first.
And we are living in modern times, yeah, so the Lord has to be announced in a modern way.
Yeah.
And I really believe that this effort exists, and also television and radio are helping in this field.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the key things that we try to do, is make that, in a sense, a translation from the language of the church to the language of modern man, so that together there's this interaction and a mutual dialogue, which is another key element of what John Paul wants in that new language, that it has to be dialogic.
And then the new approaches. And on that point, the Holy Father himself has given an example. This traveling around the world, the former popes did not never do this in this way. This was a new approach, the pastoral visits of the Pope everywhere in the world. I was with him in Poland in August, and I think that maybe only once in the Philippines there were more people at the Mass, but there were more than 2 million Polish people to celebrate with the Holy Father the Eucharist. Then the beatifications, that's also a new approach, just to show the people it is really possible to live holiness in daily life, and that human beings with all their weaknesses and with all their problems, they can be really perfect as the Lord likes them to be. I think that also the Holy Father with the dialogue started a complete new approach. He was the first pope to visit a synagogue. He was the first pope to visit a mosque. And the Holy Father really believes in the dialogue and is visiting all kinds of countries that are not at all Catholic countries, but Muslim countries or Orthodox countries or Jewish areas.
As a matter of fact, he had a very, very successful reception in Morocco, where there are very few Christians.
And now, last time, he was in Syria and in Damascus, and it was splendid.
So that this is another element. Though I would say he's actually the second pope to go to synagogue. I think St. Peter had been in one, too.
in Capernaum. Yeah. And still, the synagogue is still there.
That's right.
They're still there.
I love going to that synagogue. It's so with this new language and new approach of, for instance, his travel and other things, what about the rest of us? The Pope is giving a new approach, which in so many ways takes that which happens in Rome and brings it to every part of the world, like beatifications and canonizations. What do the rest of us do in terms of new approaches? And what do you see, for instance, sometimes Jesuits doing?
No, I think that we will follow the Holy Father because he is giving us an example and encouraging us. I have to say that dialogue, the Holy Father is really a dialogue person, is not something that we should take for granted. Not everybody is in complete agreement with the dialogue. They will feel that this is what we believe, take it or leave it. And sometimes they have the impression, but the impression is not good, that dialogue means to bargain.
Yeah.
And that is not at all the dialogue, and the Holy Father never will bargain in the dialogue with other religions. However, for example, he called together to Assisi all the religions of the world. They recognized that the Holy Father was the only one who could really bring them together, and the whole purpose of this meeting was to assure that no religion would ever teach that you can kill a human person in the name of God. Now, that is dialogue.
And this is something where dialogue is not saying, all right, if you stop killing us, then we'll... That's not it. It's we recognize the value within your religion and my religion that we share in common. And that's a starting point, not for more dialogue, but never to compromise the truth. Dialogue doesn't compromise truth.
In Assisi they prayed,
right,
but they did not pray together. The Christians, Orthodox, Protestants, Catholics prayed together, but the Buddhists, the Muslims, the Jews, they prayed all in their own way, because it would not be an expression of the truth if everybody would have prayed together. Because we are still different, we are still not united.
Yeah, and the danger would be, in one sense, a disrespect for the other by watering down my religion and their religion and calling that dialogue. But that always strikes me, and I think the Pope speaks often of this, that's not respect for the person and integrity of the person. Whereas dialogue is precisely dealing with that respect for their freedom and their personhood. Yeah. Well, Father General, why don't we take a short break, and then we'll come back and continue the next part of our conversation. So if you'd please stay with us, we'll come back and continue this interview with Father Kolvenbach, the Father General of the Society of Jesus. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jeff Cavins, and for the last 6 years, I've been your host of Life on the Rock. I'm going to be moving on to some other things. I've been holding the keys for 6 years, and now I'm going to turn them over to Father Francis Mary.
Thank you, Jeff. Join me each week here at the coffee shop for Life on the Rock on EWTN.
He's a man of many faces, poet, playwright, philosopher, pastor, and yet the man from a far country calls himself by another title, Witness to Hope. EWTN presents a striking documentary exploring the life of Pope John Paul II from the inside. Based on the book by papal biographer George Weigel, this award-winning work is the most complete and intimate film ever made on the Holy Father. Don't miss Witness to Hope, the life of Carol Votiwa, Pope John Paul II, only on EWTN.
An EWTN news link on Michael Hidalgo Grimes. The Vatican has announced the names of the members of a joint U.S.-Vatican commission that will study and revise the U.S. bishops' clerical sex abuse policy. The U.S. bishops' representatives are Cardinal Francis George, Archbishop of Chicago, Archbishop William Leveda of San Francisco, Bishop Thomas Doran of Rockford, Illinois, and Bishop Edward Laurie of Bridgeport, Connecticut. Bishop Wilton Gregory has said the goal of the commission was to finish its work in time for the November Bishops' Conference. And in other news, the Vatican's Christmas tree in St. Peter's Square this year will be a gift from Croatia. The HINA agency reported that representatives of the Croatian church and the country's political leaders would choose the tree Wednesday from the Delnice forests. Sources said Croatia's president would present the tree to the Pope at the Vatican before Christmas. Pope John Paul has visited Croatia twice and may visit there again in 2003. This has been an EWTN Newslink.
Welcome back, family. We are very privileged to have Father Peter Hans Kolvenbach, the Father General of the Society of Jesus, as our guest tonight. And I'm actually here in Chicago in the daytime, being able to do this interview, but he's taken time out of his schedule to be with us. And Father General, we've been talking about the new evangelization, the importance of having this new zeal and not flagging in any way, to have that enthusiasm for presenting Christ, an enthusiasm that comes from Christ. And secondly, a new language so that we are able to communicate with the people so that they understand it and not just that I express what I want to feel. And thirdly, new kinds of action that we have to take like the Pope has done in going worldwide. Now, this is the task of the new evangelization. Where do you see us going next? What's the future here for us?
Now, this question was already the question of St. Ignatius himself. Because Ignatius always repeated that the Society of Jesus is not there to build up its own kingdom, its own empire. He always went to the Holy Father, the Vicar of Christ on earth, to ask him, now, for the Church, for the kingdom of the Lord, what do you like us to do? And that is still a reality today, that we are in Russia, and especially in the Siberian area. That is the Holy Father who sent us to Siberia to look to all the Christians who are there, and already 50, 60 years without a priest. He sends us also to Albania, to some parts in the south of former Russia, Kyrgyzstan. He sent us to Myanmar, former Burma, in Africa. So there are geographical parts of the world where the Holy Father asks us, like others, to be involved in the evangelization. But especially at the beginning of this third millennium, the Holy Father asked everybody, that means also the Jesuits, to pay a specific attention through the three dimensions of evangelization: how to bring Christ to the modern world, the social dimension of our faith, and the spirituality of the dialogue. Mm-hmm. Now, we answer to this, especially the first question, the first task, by the tremendous educational programs we have everywhere in the world. Also in the United States, with the universities, the high schools, but also with all kind of dialogue centers, with mass media centers, and then we should not forget in the parishes the personal contact of the pastor with the faithful, what Ignatius called the conversation. This, all this is to help the people to encounter personally the Lord.
Yes.
As Jesuits, we really like always to move out. Sometimes St. Ignatius said our example is not St. Peter, who will confirm his brothers and sisters, but our example is St. Paul, who moves out to regions, but also to areas where the Lord is not known. And that can be also the dialogue with modern sciences, with technology, because the Lord should be there and is there in one way or another, but also everything what is the work on the borders, on frontiers, how to announce the Lord in all these fields of the modern world where many times he is not present because we don't allow him to be present.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I know our brothers are doing is working at the Papal Observatory, yeah, doing astronomy.
Yeah.
Precisely to do that kind of dialogue with science,
yeah,
and as well as in other countries, so that this kind of work of dialogue and this kind of effort is something that is taking us way beyond just the church building, but also to enter into other arenas as well. And this is certainly part of our mission.
To say it very strongly, we are more interested in people that are not coming to the church than people coming to the church. And this awareness that we are on mission is increasing in the society, especially that we like to be sent. And this means once more a prayerful life, a prayerful discernment to discover, now in the situation today, what is the Lord asking from us? And for us, this is the most important part of the building up of the future. What is the Lord asking from us?
Now, you mentioned that St. Ignatius would go and meet with the Pope and ask him, do you do the same as the Father General?
We still do the same, but since the Vatican Council, the Holy Father is not more the only vicar of Christ on earth. All the bishops in one way or another are vicars of the Lord on earth. And so also we listen to what the bishops have to tell us and the needs they have for the local churches.
So some of the bishops also consult with you and with our provincials.
Yeah.
And then you also meet with the Pope on a regular basis.
Like, as Ignatius already pointed out, to grow in union with the church, mm-hmm, and not to be in one way or another parallel to what the church is doing.
Father General, we've moved over here to the statue of St. Ignatius of Loyola. This is obviously a very famous image of him because he had been a soldier in the service of the King of Spain. He served very valiantly at the Battle of Pamplona. When everybody else wanted to give up, he fought bravely and was wounded. And as you had mentioned earlier, his experience of the spiritual exercises came because he was recuperating from that wound in his leg, and also because of his vanity in wanting to fix the leg the way he thought it should be, he nearly died. In that conversion, he made a change. He gave his sword to Our Lady of Montserrat. a beautiful, beautiful image still in Montserrat, Spain. And then he gave up being a knight and became a pilgrim. And that's how he spoke of himself. This is certainly part of St. Ignatius's vocation. This is how he heard it. This is his response. Today, how are vocations doing in different parts of the Society of Jesus, from your perspective, looking over the whole world?
Now, I think that everybody in the church is aware that the vocations are in crisis. That is mostly a problem of numbers, because I think that the vocations we receive, even if the number is not more so high as it was in former times, that the quality of the vocations is really high. As Jesuits, we have every year something like 600 or 700 novices. And we are very grateful for this. But then I have to say that more than 60% of all these novices come from Asia, Africa, and partly from Latin America. What means that what is called normally the first world, that means the United States, Canada, and Europe, that they, like in the whole church, that they are lacking in vocations. But once more, in number and not so much in quality. The reason, there is a very beautiful reason to this, because after, before the Vatican Council, for someone who likes really to serve the church, there was only one way of doing, to enter a novitiate or to enter a seminary. Today, there are so many movements in the church, so many groups of people who are committed to the church in one way or another, that someone can really serve the church without entering a novitiate and a seminary. However, this means on the statistical level that the number of vocations is going down. This is in the whole church. Really, there is another reason that also that in some parts of the world there are no children. And without children, you cannot expect vocations. And as Cardinal Bernardin once said, he said, well, you can expect only vocations from a hot climate of faith. If the church is not vibrant, then also the number of vocations will be down. So these are the reasons why there are not so many vocations as in former times. Even if, as Jesuits, we are very grateful to the Lord that every year that we can receive hundreds of new novices.
And one of the things that you had said earlier is that that zeal for Christ is the basis of us going out to be in mission. And because we have a zeal that comes from that relationship, that's part of what we also have to do in encouraging vocations. A seminarian I know, I gave him spiritual direction, said that in talking to his classmates, the main motive for them to be there is that each of them had been making a holy hour before the Blessed Sacrament, taking time of prayer. And it was Christ who brought them to the seminary, and that seminary in particular, and others too in this country, are seeing an increase, and hopefully we will in the society too. In terms of this increase, we hope that these 600-700 new novices a year would continue to go forward. Are there any particular areas you would like to see them develop studies so that they can do their formation with a view to the future?
Now, we are asking from all the novices and from all the Jesuits faithful to St. Ignatius apostolic availability.
What does that mean? Explain that to
us. It means that nobody enters, let us say, a province or an administration, but that everybody enters in the universal apostolic body of the society. And that according to the needs of the church, or to the needs of the people of God in the large sense of the world, that he is ready to abandon maybe another work, what was excellent, but to go there where is a greater need. And I am really touched that if I ask for help, especially for areas in Asia or for the very marginalized continent of Africa, mm-hmm. or in difficult apostolates in Latin America, if I ask Jesuits to come, I'm sure there will be always Jesuits ready to abandon another work they were doing and to go where the Lord is asking them for a greater need and for a greater glory, as Ignatius expressed himself.
Yeah. I think that's something, you know, as part of our motto of society is for the greater glory of God.
Yeah.
And that this always has to be the motive for the apostolates we take, what's going to be for the greater glory of God.
Yeah.
And this is what we ask our young men to do as well.
Now, the preparation has to be to the point that they are able to really serve the Lord better. That's the magis of St. Ignatius.
What does magis mean? Not everybody knows Latin anymore.
Well, it means more.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But I don't think that it means what sometimes some believe, that we should work more,
uh-huh.
or that we should build more universities or build more colleges.
Uh-huh.
It means that we should be more involved in what the Lord is asking from us.
Yeah.
And that every time that we should never think, now, we are doing well. Let us be happy with the situation.
Mm-hmm.
We always have to ask ourselves, is the Lord not asking more from us for his mission today in the world today?
Uh-huh. And one other thing, too, that's very important to our society, because we speak of how the Lord is making us, calling us forward, and how our zeal comes from our relationship with Christ. But we also know how St. Ignatius placed us, for instance, the sword. He placed before a statue of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And Our Lady is the queen of the society. Would you want to address any of the Mariology, the spirituality of the Blessed Virgin Mary for Jesuits and for the wider church?
Now, every time that in the life of St. Ignatius, and I believe also in the life of a Jesuit, we have to pass from one situation to another, there has a difficult decision to be taken, then always Our Lady intervened.
Uh-huh.
Also in the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius, when a very important decision has to be taken, then Ignatius suggests to us that we should start a conversation with Our Lady, because her yes to the plan of God should be inspire us to be obedient of all what the Lord is asking us today.
Yeah. And one of the privileges for me was to be able to celebrate Mass once in the chapel next to the same icon of the Blessed Mother where our first fathers made their final vows.
Yeah, and that is Our Lady on the Way,
yes.
It is called La Strada, uh-huh. in Italian, because for St. Ignatius, Our Lady was the way to Christ he likes the Jesuits also to follow.
Yeah, so that this sense, even in the spiritual exercises, he asks us in each meditation to ask Our Lady,
yeah.
talk to her as a friend to a friend, and then ask her to take us to Jesus.
And to learn from Our Lady,
yeah.
how to speak with her Son,
uh-huh.
and to speak with the Lord.
Yeah, yeah. So this is, you know, that sense of our faith, having that zeal, also is one motivated by the love of that particular woman. You know, I think we men need to have that love of a woman to get us motivated, as well as, of course, the love of our Lord. And so I think that this is a very important dimension of our Jesuit spirituality.
Of the Ignatian spirituality.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that as we ask for more vocations, too, we're asking them to engage in that same relationship with the Blessed Virgin Mary. Are there any other comments that you would like to make yourself? Are there any reflections that you would like to add for our audience to think about their own apostle, whether they're Jesuits or not?
Well, I think that in this large conversation, there is one aspect we did not touch,
uh-huh.
and that is the social dimension of our faith.
Yes. Please.
And I think it is always necessary to say that this is not a political or an ideological question to be social, but that is just the imitation of what the Lord did himself. He preached, but at the same time, our Lord was healing, was teaching, was nourishing, was intervening for the people who were suffering, fighting against injustice. And that is what the church today, and also the Holy Father, is doing. When at Sunday he prays the Angelus with the whole church, then there will be always something said about a spiritual topic, but at the same time the Holy Father will ask for prayer for this or that difficult situation in the world, injustices, war conditions, accidents. So the Holy Father himself gives us the example that our faith has a social dimension, and that we cannot call ourselves Christians, and that the Jesuits cannot call themselves companion of Jesus without sharing with him the love of the poor.
Now, is this something that would divide conservatives and liberals inside the church, or is it something different?
Now, as such, it should never divide the church, because it is the Lord himself who has given this example, and the church itself is doing this. But if it is not well understood, and that can easily be the case, then it could divide what you call conservatives and progressives in the church.
No, but that's not the issue. The issue is, how do we help best those who are in greatest need? What will be some of the social concerns that especially we have to work on? Again, you have a perspective that would be looking at large parts of the world many of us never hear about, and you have either personal contact or contact by letter. What are some of the main issues that we have to work on, the social kind of question?
I think it was in the large tradition of religious life, the sisters, well-known, the brothers, well-known, and also the priests, the religious priests, well-known, who always took up, in the name of the Lord, the difficult issues and the difficult sufferings of the human persons.
Yes.
This, we have done this in the last year, especially with the refugees. In Africa, there will be more than 25 million.
25 million
refugees, and well, they are completely abandoned, because without speaking against the newspapers, they shift very easily from one important part of the world to another. Now everybody is thinking about Afghanistan, but there are many countries in Africa with war conditions, a lot of refugees, and nobody pays attention. And then typically religious life traditionally comes in, that sisters and brothers and priests, and also we Jesuits, we move in to help, in the name of the Lord, the refugees who are the poorest of the poor there. Especially when they are forgotten, and especially if they are neglected. This is just one example of this social involvement in the name of the Lord.
As a matter of fact, we have a whole ministry just of refugee work.
And now we are shifting to what is called the immigrants. I don't know if this is a problem in the United States. I think so, because the border, especially in the south, but in Europe, Europe is invaded by people from other continents, seeing that there is no future for them, and they like to go to Europe. But all these people are completely abandoned, and sometimes they are manipulated or exploited. And then the church, and I really see the church, comes in to help these people, because all these people are created at the image and resemblance of the Lord, and Christ is also Savior for them.
So this goes back to that new evangelization, which first of all begins with seeing their dignity as persons and not as this mass of immigrants or a mass of refugees, but each one is a person with a dignity. And that our job in the church, in the new evangelization, is to work with those persons. And, you know, I think one of the other concerns about vocation we talked about is that oftentimes people don't see that there's a need to do the work anymore. They'll figure the government does it, we don't need to. But that's not the case, is it?
Even if the government is really in the line of welfare, there are always cases like the work of Mother Teresa.
Yeah.
That is typically a field where the state never came in.
And then
it is typically the church in the name of Christ who takes a commitment in this area.
Besides the issue of immigrants and refugees, what else would be some of the social concerns that we need to address?
Now, today, that is the whole economy as such. It is a market economy. And also the Holy Father is stressing that the economy should be at the service of the people and not against the people. And that is a concern, but especially on the level of academic research of the universities where all these people are educated is a quite important issue.
As a matter of fact, a number of our Jesuit brothers are working in the studying of economics because we have to see, again, that new evangelization. Economics cannot be outside of the Christian faith. And that the Pope John Paul, as you say, is always saying, where is the centrality of the person and the dignity?
There is no more area where Christian values are not necessary. In former times, only theology and philosophy were considered as important for the evangelization and to carry on Christian values. Today, in all fields, there is humanity at stake and Christian values are there really, as is in traditional language said, to save the technology, to save the progress of mankind today.
Which is also exactly the call of Vatican II. That we have to evangelize the culture so that it's not the unchristian that run the culture. In any element of the culture.
Without the Christian values, all this progress would be suicidal. And we know this.
Whereas precisely because Christ is life, he can restore the value of life to the progress.
So in a certain way, it is really true that the problems of our times are spiritual problems. Where is the heart of the people who are doing everything in technology, in science, in progress? If this heart is not like the heart of Christ, it will not be for the real progress of humanity.
And this is precisely contrary to the values of the gospel. Would there be any last comments that you want to make before we, as we end up our last couple of minutes? You know, in terms of any other social questions, because certainly the issue of peace is something that we also have to work on. You, who spent so much time in the Middle East, are well aware of that as well.
Yeah, there we have a very difficult situation. I don't like to enter in details.
Right.
But it is really a problem for all that there where the great religions have started, Judaism, Islam, Christianity, to bring peace, that just there we have war-torn situations.
And I think both of us are well aware from our mutual experience that it's not that they're fighting over religion usually, it's mostly over land and power. And religion gets in the way.
Many times religion is used as a card to play against one another.
Right, but it's not about that. And we, as religious people, have to, I think, do as you were mentioning with the Pope before, how do we summon the other religions to this work of cooperating, seeing dignity, and dialogue? Well, Father General, this has certainly been a tremendous privilege for me. We've never met before, and it's a great privilege to be able to enter into this kind of conversation. And I think it's also going to be something very helpful for our audience, because they also don't know much about you, your ministry, your work for the church, and sometimes not enough about us Jesuits at large. So I very much appreciate the kind of conversation that you've had with us. And I especially would appreciate it if you would, you know, extend your blessing to our audience at this point in our program.
May the Lord bless you all in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Thank you very much. Appreciate this, and hopefully we'll be able to do some other conversation again.
We hope so.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
God bless you.